This is Power Podcast UK with Jenny and Mark.
We're writing a book and we're having a tough time getting it done. If you find it hard to motivate yourself to do something, this is the podcast for you as we explore why we procrastinate and find ways to help us get our book finished.
Whether or not you're writing a book, making a film, painting a picture, or even motivating yourself to do the housework, join us. Let's find a way to get this stuff done. Hi guys, and welcome to episode 28 of Power Podcast UK. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Jenny, Power Podcast UK, episode 28. Ooh. We are here, we are ready to entertain you all.
Yeah, and we're going to crack on, aren't we? Because we've got an interview this time with the lovely Chris Billingham, I did the interview with Chris, and I didn't put much of an intro on it because I did one, and then we did the first interview, and then my laptop died, and then we had to record again, so it's a little bit disjointed.
That pesky laptop.
It's a nightmare.
I've got to say
doing that and everything else.
I've got to say it's a really good interview.
Oh, that's nice.
It's really good. I really enjoyed listening to it, and it was really interesting to hear from Chris as well. His talents as a writer and creative.
Yeah, and I've known Chris for quite a long time now. So I've been casting a few of his plays that he's written. He's written quite a few plays. He's also written quite a few screenplays and done videos and won awards for one of the short films that he's done, the short web series he's done as well. Hang on, no, that's wrong. He's won an award for his short film, and he's also done a web series and other bits and pieces. He's a very, very, very productive writer, but as you'll hear, it all depends on the deadlines and the timescales.
Yeah, I think he puts us to shame with our speed and his prolific writing prowess.
Yeah, but I think he's got a different situation. It's we're setting our own deadlines in a way, whereas he's doing things for other people, and it's a different situation. We just need someone to ask us to do something.
Yeah.
It was lovely to interview him, and I felt it was like he was interviewing me at some point, so it's quite nice.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy as well, and he's got his own podcast and all sorts of things. So should we quickly talk about how people can find Chris before we get on with the interview?
You can do. I think I will put a lot of links on our website, on our show notes for this.
He has a podcast called Nothing But Static.
Yes.
And that is, if you just go to where you find your podcast and type in Nothing But Static, it will come up. He co-podcasts with a guy called Dan Doolan, and their podcast is all about TV. And it's a very, very good podcast as well.
Yeah, well, they do a few. There's another one that's all about Steven Universe.
I was just about to say. Oh my God, it's the best podcast for the best subject matter as well. To completely dedicated to Steven Universe. Which is brilliant, which gets my thumbs up for sure. So Jenny, how did the interview come about? If you had to give the interview a title, what would you call it? What are you finding out in your conversation with Chris?
Oh, I think I wouldn't give it a concise title, but the things we covered, we talked a lot about how we write with partners and how that affects your writing. We talked a lot about diversity and how to bring that into your writing, and also a little bit about our education, how that's affected us and how we communicate and how that impacts on your writing, and lots of different bits and pieces, especially about deadlines and finishing things and going through the whole process of writing. So yeah, it's a really nice one.
So it's like a writer's round table. One writer talking to another writer.
Yeah, like a little chat. Well, you've gone.
Yeah, it's like a chat.
Oh, you went there.
So it's like a writer's round table, sharing ideas from one to another.
Informal discussion about writing and a little bit of silliness as well.
I can imagine if it was on telly, you'd be in a white room, both sat on a lovely high wing back armchair, both of you, with maybe a cup of tea or maybe a gin and tonic.
I mean, we had some cider. It was very nice. Some chilled cider, fruity cider.
We could have cider. Why not?
I imagine us sat in maybe some battered old armchairs rather than, you know, anything too posh. Shooting the breeze.
A wing back armchair.
A wing back. Oh, nice. I like it. Yes.
With a nice rug.
And a roaring fire. And snow falling gently outside.
Yeah, this isn't my white room analogy, but that's fine. We can completely dress. We can completely dress the set.
Maybe I could be one half, and he can be in the other half, and then it'll meet in the middle. It'll be like half a roaring fire and half like a white wall.
That doesn't seem like a cozy atmosphere, Jenny. That seems conflicting.
It's a compromise.
I'd just be thinking the whole time which side do I want to be on.
Are you thinking, oh no, that wall's going to catch fire with half the roaring fire next to it? Oh no.
That is exactly where my mind would go. OMG. So, without further ado, shall we get on with the interview?
Let's do it, Mark.
We're going to have a very quick break. We're going to hear a little bit about our sponsors, and then we'll go straight into the interview. So stick around after for everything you want to know about how writers write. I want to talk about Bad Fish Studio. Jenny, have you ever been in a situation where you need to get some t-shirts or some hoodies printed?
But just like unique ones that just come from my head and I've got an idea and I can't find it anywhere else.
Like your own bespoke all the time. Design. Well, Bad Fish Studio can do that for you. Maybe you're organising a hen night, maybe you're organising a stag night or a special birthday celebration and you want everyone to be wearing the same t-shirts or the same hoodies. You can get them designed online with Bad Fish Studio. They do everything from t-shirts to hoodies and a lot more as well.
Ooh, and I guess they're only to order from £15.
Yep, that's it. So it's a bargain.
And they could do really cool stuff. They've got loads of specialist vinyl and various methods, and they can make like the best, most perfect thing that you really, really want to make your garment come alive.
Yep, and they can work with you on your design as well. So you're not alone. They will be able to help you with all their expertise of all the design that they've done before. And what's even better, what's more than that, is if you go to badfishmerch.com, find a t-shirt you want. Maybe you like one they already have in their shops. If you use offer code POW, that's POW, you can save 10%.
Yay! That's great.
So where are they? Where is Bad Fish Merch?
Well, you can find them on Facebook, Mark, at Mark, March, Merch. You can find them on Facebook, Mark, at Bad Fish Merch. Instagram is Bad Fish Studio. Or you can just go to badfishmerch.com and check it out. They've got loads of really cool stuff. They can do full colour images or bold coloured vinyl, including metallic, leather and carbon fibre look vinyl. Glow in the dark, reflective. And what else, Mark?
Well, they either do rainbow or glitter for all you snazzy unicorns out there.
I'm a snazzy unicorn. That sounds great.
I love a snazzy unicorn. Just go straight to badfishmerch.com, use offer code POW to save 10% and get designing.
Hello again.
Hello. This is our second attempt recording what was a fantastic first interview, I thought. It was award-winning.
Yeah, I thought we gave some really good stuff.
It was in depth. It was emotional. We covered all the bases.
We cried. We laughed.
Oh, we talked about Beyonce. It was everything that you could need.
Beyonce did come up.
Quite a lot.
I referenced
too much, really.
Coolio.
Everyone was in there. And then my laptop died, so we're trying again.
We're going again. It's fine.
It's fine. Worry. It's fine, right? It's fine.
Yes, absolutely fine.
So, Chris, you've written some stuff.
I have. Lovely introduction. Chris, I preferred your one last time.
It was really good last time, wasn't it? It was thought it was about. Good. Now, I've always known you to write stuff. You've written so many things. You've done stand-up comedy. You've done web series. You're doing a podcast. You do two or three podcasts?
We do two. There's three at the moment. We've done, I suppose, in total four, but one stopped.
All right. And your plays as well, and writing for short films. So you're a very prolific writer.
Thank you. How do you do it?
How do you fit it all in?
One project at a time, I think. And then the podcast. The podcast is an ongoing thing, I think, for 5 or 6 years now. But yeah, it's one. I don't think I've ever. Yeah, it's always been either a play or a short film or something. I don't know. I don't think that's deliberate. I think it's laziness.
You need the motivation.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, it will take, like, the only reason I'm doing a play in October is because at a committee meeting, someone at the theatre said, oh, maybe Chris will write something. And I went, yeah, I'll write something.
But isn't that great? You've got that opportunity.
It's brilliant. And I have never undervalued that opportunity. I'm aware that there's people writing out there that don't have access to someone with a camera or don't have... don't have a local theatre company that are willing to take a risk, because when they put the first one on, I'd just finished uni and there was no...
You just finished uni then?
Yeah,
really?
I just finished uni and it was a script writing degree. But yeah, they took a real... I was in a play and I'd mentioned to someone that I'd done a script writing degree, Nigel, who you know. And Nigel, I think, was just keen to put on different things. Mm. So just essentially commissioned it and kind of not until the read through read it, and it could have gone badly wrong.
You could have been a really bad writer. It was a massive risk, isn't it?
I wouldn't say I'm not a really bad writer.
No, you're a really good writer.
But yeah, it was really good of them. And the same with James, who's produced and filmed the films. But to be honest with you, me and the guy I do a podcast with were doing a web series, and I told someone at work about it, and she said, oh, my husband makes films. Maybe you should see if he'll be the cameraman. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I think...
Is that how you got
that's
to know
how I hooked
James?
Up with James.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
yeah. And
just,
that's grown
just people
into...
people that you know, wow.
Yeah, and it's... So I think it is always worth asking. Like, you genuinely don't know, I think, who knows who and stuff.
I think that's why networking, I think, is just the key to... everything really. It's who you know and who you can talk to and get opportunities from.
Definitely.
So you talked a little bit about your script writing course, and we've talked about this before, of course. Would you mind a little bit about what that involved?
It was basically, I was into writing at that point. I described it in the last chat. We gotta stop making references. That'll get really
but
annoying.
Please talk about your friends rip off again, because I think that's really important. God.
But that's how it grew for me. Like, I'd watch TV and then I kind of went, oh, I could think of a TV show, and I'd think of a TV show, and then I'd go, oh, what would the episode titles be? And I'd do the episode titles, and then that wouldn't be enough, so I'd do the synopsis, and it just built until I was writing scripts. And at a UCAS thing, without going on a big education rant, at my school it was all about trying to get you into uni. And I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to go because I don't know what I would do at uni. And the woman went, oh, search it in UCAS, search what you're interested in. And I sort of really, like, this arrogant, sarky teenager was like, they won't have screenwriting, and searched it, and they did at Bournemouth Uni, which is where I met Dan, who I do the podcast with. And we were talking about how the first assignment was to write a short film that was 6 minutes long, and mine was awful because the brief was write something without any dialogue, and I wrote something that needed dialogue and wrote around dialogue, as opposed to the guy who just went, oh, I'm writing it about a guy that goes deaf, which is such a genius premise because it makes the most of no dialogue and actually utilises it.
Yeah, but it's a bigger challenge for you to write something where people could speak and have all of the...
Yeah.
Directions and...
A challenge I did not meet.
Well, it's first
a
year
bit,
at uni, though.
There's a bit where the girl in the short film looks at a letter from the guy. I mean, that's
you're
just
writing down the
that's
words.
Just, yeah, that's just dialogue in props. Like, it's the equivalent of having speech bubbles.
It's like, better than my idea. It's like, I think like slapstick, like Buster Keaton would be good, because I'll just have those screens with the words on. And that's how I'd get
and
around it.
You're sure your 6 minute short film would be 20 pages long because of the detail required to write like slapstick on the page.
Yeah, duck, this ladder comes around, stands up, ladder comes around. That's how I'd do it.
But have you ever written in script format?
Well, it's... Because I haven't, I'm doing, there's a Future Learn, have you heard about Future Learn?
No.
It's like a website where you can do short courses for free.
Cool. Oh, awesome.
Or you can upgrade and pay properly. But there's a University of East Anglia screenwriting course, like a two-week long one. So I had a quick look at that because and Mandy have written a play.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how, because I've seen loads of scripts.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen a lot of screenplays and how the formatting works. Mm. So I did have a quick look, but I've never.
No, I just wondered.
I don't know what the difference is apart from... like shots and
and it's sort of so thing. It's interesting because this is a I was, you know, when you said about being interviewed, I was thinking about what could we talk about, and I wanted your opinion because Dan and I disagree wholeheartedly with when writing scripts, some elements of the scripts that I've written are like stories, so in the sense that the scene directions will have in jokes. So the last one, I think, contained, it said something like, they end up stood there nodding at each other like two Churchill nodding dogs in the back of a car, Not that anyone would have two of those. That would be preposterous. Now, that doesn't, as a description, that doesn't add anything to the scene directions. And Dan feels that scene directions should be scene directions. You shouldn't, if the audience are never going to see that in joke, whose benefit is it for? Whereas I'm like, fuck it. And I was just curious, because it would intrigue, because your writing is more story form. I was intrigued about whether if you wrote a script, whether that would bleed into it
in
that way.
It's funny, actually, because writing with Mandy wants to put a lot of stage directions in regarding emotions and what people are doing and, like, really setting it out.
Yeah.
And I do think that when you write scripts, it's a lot to do with the actor and the portrayal, and that's why it's different, because you're not even if you're writing a story in a book, if you're writing it down like that, most of the things happen in people's minds.
Yeah, and that's why I've always felt bad that the scripts for the plays I've written have had things like Josh looks angry, or like Josh raises his eyebrow, and it's you don't see that in most play scripts, because it's not the audience are unlikely to see that. And my defense of it would be it's an instruction for the actor.
Yes.
But I think it is. Writing across different mediums, I think, is not as easy as people think. Or you've got to be in a position where, like, I know that you don't care that it's, you know what I mean? But if I was, I suppose that's why I've never submitted anything to anyone else, because they would care, I think.
I don't know, but it's a massive leap, isn't it? Do you think that's holding you back? Is it the doubt?
What, from doing that? What, from submitting? No, I don't.
From submitting, I know, but I don't. Is it, are you holding yourself back because you don't think it's... But you've done a course. Everything you should do should be perfect. Because that's what happens at uni.
That's what happens when you do a course.
You learn how to do stuff perfectly.
Everyone on that course at uni wasted the opportunity that was that course. No one networked. No one really... I remember some shoddy... Like, there were people in the room when we were submitting one script, this guy... I won't name for obvious reasons. He was like, all right, I finished my draft. I was like, you know, we need to submit two drafts for this. And then I've got to find and replace the names. Like, there was an element of that. I think he then maybe went on to write a draft. I don't know. But I don't think, but it's without sounding wanky, it's the youth is wasted on the young philosophy. But
yeah, I think so. I mean, I did media and cultural studies, and out of my 10 group of friends, I think one of us is still working in media, and the rest are teachers, marketing.
Lots of marketing people.
Lots of marketing people. It's funny how we all turn to marketing.
Yeah, but I do. I'd like to think it's not an excuse. I genuinely think it is a more achievable way to outlay some creative, do you know what
you're communicating, and that's what I liked, and that's what I still carry on doing, and that's what I really like about it.
I still actually spend quite a bit of my day writing,
you
know what I mean, it's just not writing scripts.
I mean, you're writing rubbish blogs about just fucking any old crap. Not my clients are great,
as are mine, but some people in marketing
some people write about any old shit. Not us, professionals.
The good stuff.
But yeah, sometimes I do think, I'm not writing. They actually have...
Professionals recorded this for a second time because the recording stopped.
Because I didn't turn the plug on. So much good stuff in the first interview. Oh, I've lost my train of thought now.
Marketing.
You've written tweets and stuff. You're still communicating on a level. You're doing it every day.
Mm. And I wouldn't... I don't think... Because without getting too specific, my role at work has evolved to producing video for work.
Yeah.
That never would have happened if it weren't for the script writing stuff. So I think it has benefited. Yeah, definitely. I think it's given it helps understand messages, maybe.
Yeah.
And pulling out those messages and stuff.
I think a lot of it's to do with who you're writing for as well. I think that's one of the things you learn in marketing that you don't... Do you learn that in your uni degrees? I don't know. And the marketing ones, obviously.
Yeah.
But finding an audience and communicating to that audience, finding out what they want
I don't
and need.
Think
it's
so,
not. It's more about your creative vision, isn't it?
Especially at uni when you're only writing for the lecturer. Like, I remember my third year project was a rom-com about rom-coms.
You've got such a theme going on for the whole body of your work.
Yeah, I know. And they gave me a lecturer who hated rom-coms. And he literally, in my first meeting with him, he was like, this is going to be a challenge because I don't really like rom-coms. And I'm like, brilliant. And it didn't feel like I was writing for an audience.
Yeah.
It felt like I was writing
for them,
in part
for
him. That was awful, that script.
That's terrible.
Can I tell you the one joke in that script I liked?
Yes.
this guy is talking about melting. He says, "Oh yeah, I've got a sweet tooth. I once melted a chocolate bar and over a Yorkshire pudding." And then he goes, "It was a Yorkshire pudding." And this female character goes, "Oh, that sounds lovely." And he goes, "It's not for girls." Bad joke.
And, it's really bad.
And the kind of thing I hate now, because I hate when other people like play on, like Yorkie and their marketing did the work for that joke.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't do any, like, and I hate when I see that now, you know, when people play
on
that.
Yeah. It's just like just a cultural reference that sets it in a time, if you're doing it properly.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. That's the only joke I remember from that script. It was awful. It was a really bad script. It was just a bad joke. Did you ever do that, look back on old writing and go, "Oh, Jesus"?
I don't think... Yeah, oh, I don't know. I haven't got that much old writing to go back on. Mm-hmm. Mainly because I don't ever finish anything, so I don't look at it again.
But why don't you finish, Jen?
I don't know. I just don't. That's why I write with other people, because they make me finish stuff. Motivator. Without Mark, I wouldn't have... We've nearly written a book now.
Mm.
And I wouldn't have been motivated to do it. Without Mandy, I wouldn't have written anything to do with plays or scripts or anything like that.
I kind of think the same, but not... Even though... most of my writing actually now has been written on my own. Some of it was written with Dan, who I do the podcast with. But there's always still another person motivating. So it's always James going, "Oh, we should do a film." Or it's the theatre company going, "Oh, are you going to put on a play?" So I think there's always, there's always someone else involved.
I think that's what I did notice about you, is that you're always driven by deadlines.
Yeah, it's that's why the grammar is so poor and there's been a few occasions, the last play I moved a deadline because the first draft was so awful. I think you were fascinated by that in the first chat, the fact that I do a lot of the redrafting in my head
before I find that really interesting to the page.
I don't know why. I think it's I don't know, I really enjoy the finished product. I don't know how much enjoyment I get from sitting there and typing. I suppose when you see it coming together, but I don't know if that's the reason or if it's just... I think I don't like to... I don't personally do that thing of, "Oh, I'm just going to start and see where it goes." I like to know where it's going.
See, I think I keep sitting down going, "I need to know where it's going," but I think I should just write without knowing where it's going.
I think
because
if it's stopping
the
you
other
writing,
things start working.
Yeah. That, and that's what I did. The last thing I wrote, that's what I did. I went, "I don't know where this begins. I know where it ends. I know the middle." So I started at the middle. And it was really easy to fill the beginning in when you've done the middle.
So how long does it take you to write? If it's all in your head, are you actually sitting there? Do you have anything like writer's block? Or is it by the time you sit down, it's ready to go?
If, depending on how much I know. So the last one where I didn't know the beginning took the, so what you've read, which is I think it's like a 10 page it's the first part of a web series, I think that took four or five hours. But there have been occasions where it's taken as long as it takes to type.
Yeah, just come straight out
because it's so
That's
in
amazing.
My head. But then I will have to go back and then I don't know if it's, again, that self-doubt thing, but I kind of I wish that wasn't the case, because if I could take any of those scripts now and look back on, things were made and I look back on them and go, "Oh God, I'd change that." Like the short film Go With Him, which was the last short film we made. I don't know if in the script I did it's a character makes a drastic decision in that. And kind of U-turns on a decision she's previously made. And I don't think I did enough to believably convince you that character's U-turn makes sense. And I think there's a lot of things like that where if I actually redrafted on the page more and wasn't motivated by deadlines, I'd go back and fix some of that stuff.
Would you go back and fix it? Or do you think once it's done, it's done?
If we hadn't filmed it yet, then absolutely, I'd go back and... And that's why I wish the deadline wasn't, "Right, we're going to start casting and filming." Because once you...
But how much notice do you get? Or are you holding it off? Because it's all very well saying, that deadline. But was that deadline set 6 months or was it set six days?
Yeah, the
deadline's terrible. I've known for 4 months, but I've had it percolating.
Right. Yeah, yeah, that's my excuse. Well, I've been percolating it. Like, Chris, it's a 6-page script. Well, I've been percolating. I wish there was... I absolutely wish that I was less to the wire.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I think there's, like I say, there's definitely things I would change. And I think sometimes you need the space.
Yes.
You need to look back on it and go, oh, shit. And if you leave it right to the last minute, there isn't the space.
You don't have any time to
redraft. Unless it's really, like the last play we did, that had I had an awful first draft. And then I did go, no, I need to change this. Because you just know when it's not where you want it to be. And I think maybe that's because in that example, I was too broad with knowing the beats. So yeah. I kind of, my preferred way of writing is to have a beat sheet, which is a script writing term, where you've kind of got, so it will say scene, the beat of, the first beat is Jenny coming in, and the second beat is her and Chris having a chat, and the third beat is setting up the recording. And I prefer, so that's my ideal way, where I'm just fleshing out the dialogue. And
that's a plotting out though, isn't it?
Yeah,
and that's what me and Mark did with the spreadsheet, going, well, this will happen and this will happen. It's the same sort of thing.
But I'm always and it's, you can tell it, I think, in when Dan and I review stuff for the podcast, I always think in terms of plot and what's happening. I don't pay enough attention, I don't think, to characters. Well, that's my thing about Go With Him. It's a character thing. I don't know if I've worked out the beats of what happens, but I don't know if I've always worked out the beats of how the characters feel and their justification for what's happening.
It's like a sort of like a sheen even. There's not a lot going on behind.
I think the only way, I think if anyone else writes like that and is like, how can that work? I think the only way you can potentially make that work is to always write yourself in a way, because that will come through. And there's elements of me, I think, in each character. And
isn't that true with everything though? I do.
Yeah,
well, maybe. I try and fight against this with Nick, because whenever, one of the reasons why I don't write a lot is because every time I do write something, Nick thinks it's about me and him, and it's not always, but there's always a bit of you in every character, because how are you gonna get inside them otherwise?
And you ever I've thought of things and gone, oh, I can't,
too close, yeah,
but I've always, for other people, I don't give a shit about being too close for me, like, and being too personal from my point of view. But there's definitely stuff in people that are close to me that I'd love to explore, but I've always resisted asking as well.
Yeah.
I definitely want to talk about your raving cocaine habit, Jenny.
Let's not talk about this now. That was on the first interview.
Yeah, we really went deep on Jenny's drug habit in the first one.
It's a shame though, because I my lot, we've had loads of problems and things, and it would be a huge melting pot to unravel. But yeah, you're right. You can't mess around with other people's lives like that.
No, and you're
better
off
just unpicking your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Scarred life.
And how much do you think about the external environment? Because I've wrestled with recently, the thing I've written, the web series I referenced earlier that I sent you, the reason I've not gone back to it yet is because I'm really wrestling with working out the female character, almost to the point where I was like, unless I need to work out a way that I can write this character. And I've never felt that before, and I don't know if I've just, the other female characters have been a bit more me, or if that's to do with the even though I don't think anyone is going to watch it, in a world where, in a world where Jack Whitehall can't play a gay character because he's not gay, it makes me think, oh, Christ, can I write about this topic if I've not experienced it? Can I write this thing if I've not been through it? And it's really, which is mental, because no one's going to see the damn thing. Do you know what I mean? I'm not expecting it to be watched by a lot of people, but that's still a factor for me.
I think so. I think looking at the stuff I've written with Mark, I'm looking back and going, there's no people of colour there. There's no, you know, it's quite diverse in sexuality, but not in much else. I'm like, God, they're all white. It's not. But then how can I write? How can I write a black person? I don't think that I can.
But yeah, because no, I've not been no there. One, but I've never. No one's ever said to me before, "Oh, your female characters are weak." And in someone somewhere, there was a big. There was a no in Sneaking. There was a homosexual story about two gay characters, and no one said
you did really no. But you do really good characters. Is this because the first time you sent me a draft, I had a go at you for lazy descriptions?
No, not at all. No. Because it's because nothing in the web series script. It was an awful description. You were right. No, it's because a female character doesn't do anything in that and doesn't have any character, but. But even though no one said with Sneaking, and you played one of the lesbian characters, and neither
God,
you
I forgot about that. Yeah, and I played a gay person. And I'm just like Jack Whitehall. Neither, it's terrible.
Neither you nor no, I don't think that's the issue there. neither you nor anyone else said. Like a friend who is gay said that they thought that represented the situation quite well, but maybe that's because in that instance it wasn't the story wasn't about the fact that they were lesbians. The story was actually just a romance.
But the story shouldn't always exactly. be that they're lesbians. But that is it's so, not.
But
it's
why
not
am I
issue.
Thinking it? Why am I thinking? Do you know what I mean? Why now am I doubting my ability to write a female character? And is it just because in that first draft the female character I wrote wasn't very strong, or is it the external environment?
I think it's a mix of both.
Yeah,
I think your external environment will always affect you.
And that external environment is going to affect people more and more.
Yeah.
Because there will come a point where any disabled character is played by a disabled actor. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but there will be potentially someone who... Well, Bo Burnham's a brilliant example of it. He wrote that Eighth Grade, which he released last year, is a film about a teenage girl. It's actually a film about insecurities. Mm-hmm. And he could write that film because it was about insecurities. And because it's brilliant, no one's kind of gone, oh, well, did he have any right to write that? But maybe, if it was bad, maybe they would have.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think when it's lazy, that's when you knew that the character wasn't well developed enough. Yeah. And that's what's making you think
that's
that.
That's true.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have thought about it.
Yeah.
Because you write really good characters.
Thank you.
You're that's award-winning.
Very kind of you. Don't,
we haven't talked about you being award-winning yet, have we? Not this time, anyway. You've won awards.
Really awkward.
How many awards have
nice.
You won? Just the one.
I think just the one for the writing.
Did you not win a stand-up competition as well?
Oh, I won. Oh. I won. Have you said where you live on this podcast before?
No, I think if you were clever, you could probably work us out. No, Mark lives in York, so he's always said that.
Well, let's
so I must
say,
have said.
Well, we live in a small Berkshire town.
Yes.
Right. And I won Small Berkshire Town Talent 3. So it was a local talent competition.
I wish that was what it was called, Small Berkshire Town.
Yeah. That's not as funny when you hear that. Well, let's say the town is Slough. I won Slough Talent 3. It's not Slough, but that's to get across how weird it was. And I came first with a stand-up act in that, and second was like I think she was like 10-year-old pole dancer.
Whoa.
And I had to get interviewed by the local paper in this tiny room with me, the 10-year-old pole dancer, and our mum and the interviewer, and it was the most awkward situation in the world. I was like, this is so weird. Like, she was like, so you tell jokes, and I was like, yeah. I have to leave this room. This is such a weird environment. This is so odd. So technically, if you count Slough Talent 3, yes.
Award winning. Not just one, two awards.
I was very pleased with the short film.
Good, you should be.
That was good getting into festivals and stuff. That was,
do you feel a lot of pressure now?
Are
you writing?
Only pressure I'm putting on myself because I, as we discussed, don't think the script for that was up to par. Mm. And I kind of feel excited. I kind of feel like, well, if I put more time into the script, James being as good as he is, we could do something really good next. We could do something I could be really proud of.
Then we talked about in the first interview that was amazing, was just about how much time we don't spend writing, that we could spend writing.
Yeah.
Because life gets in the way.
Yeah, which is ridiculous because fundamentally there's no excuse. Because we found time for this.
Yeah.
I'm going out with a friend on Friday for curry. I found time for that. And actually we talked about how we both go, yeah, but I want to spend time with our respective partners.
It's hard
and actually
when you've got
both
family.
Our respective partners would be like, no, go right.
Yeah. Get out of my way.
Absolutely be fine.
Nick
and
be
happy.
Straight in the garage with a motorbike. It'd be fine. You'd be really happy.
So I think that's, you do definitely make excuses. And I think my big one is either that or I'm letting it percolate, like a wanky process excuse. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What's your, I don't think I do a lot of, we did in, Dan and I wrote a web series called Writing Space about two failed writers.
Yeah.
Wonder where the inspiration for that came from. And there's a scene where one of the characters comes in and he's like, oh, I think I might organise the DVD. And he's like, all alphabetical and by genre. And like, and it's, I don't feel like I do that. I don't feel like I go, I need to clean the house before I can write.
Yeah, I could never do that.
I just do life shit. Yeah. And I just don't even, you know, I don't even tell myself I'm going to write.
I think, I don't know, because it's hard for me because I work from home and actually if I organise myself better, I could spend a lot more time writing.
Yeah.
But I do spend a lot of time messing about, looking at social media because apparently that's my job. So I need to look at all of it all the time and I don't need to look.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
But you get sucked in and then
is
it laziness or is it just
I really don't,
putting
it off? I have a real
procrastination.
I feel like it's laziness and I feel like when other people hear laziness as an excuse, they think it's fear.
Yeah.
But I, yeah.
Mine definitely is fear, though.
I think fear, and I think, and this is either you are going to, or anyone listening is going to get what I mean by this, or they're going to think I'm just talking wanky nonsense. But I think because people that write naturally have quite a vivid imagination, even if not sat physically writing, they're still thinking about ideas and stuff. And they're still fictionalizing things in their heads.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I can live in a world where I've got like 8 short films.
Are you justifying it? I'm not writing it down, but it's all going on inside my head.
No.
I have the most vivid daydreams.
I'm saying, in some ways, are you not?
I'm always writing
those stories because it's in some ways they're never going to be in your head. I'm sure they would be in reality, but they're never going to be as good as those vivid daydreams. So why not just live in the vivid daydreams for
a bit?
I
do like the vivid daydreams.
You know, like I've got, with music, I just always takes the piss because like I've got like fiction. If I'm showering or something or going to bed, sometimes I just like pretend to be a musician and have a fictional band in my head. Jenny's nodding. She's allowing me Jenny's allowing me to sound like a dick, but she is nodding. Right. So in a way, rather than put pen to paper and actually write something, fucking rock star in the shower. So do you know what I mean?
I'd like to justify that actually we're always writing, we're always working, our mind's always writing, it's just getting down on paper. But our imaginations are just, you know, winning awards.
Never going to write something about an indie rock band that broke up. And
why
then
not
got
though?
Back
you
together.
Could! Is that your dream too? Because I've had that one.
I don't think it's a dream. Because I'd like to think if it was. Although, then again, so here's a question. If you could go back in time, would you encourage your younger self to play a musician, play a instrument?
I did. I was in a band. It was terrible.
Okay, so you've done that. I don't know.
But I didn't. It's funny because now Hector's doing piano lessons. I can see where like actually going for professional lessons is a big benefit than just buying a guitar and expecting yourself to know how to play
is
the
that
guitar.
Is what you did?
Because that's what I did.
What was the band called?
I can't remember. It's just some girls from school. And literally, I knew one riff. It was High and Dry by Radiohead. That's all I knew. And she's like, let's have a band. Yes, we went round. I played my riff and that was it.
That gives such a vivid impression of you as a teenager. The fact that it was the riff from High and Dry by Radiohead. I think I would rather be a writer than a musician. But I think there is a certain truth in people that write comedy and write in general, there's a sense of secretly wanting to be rock stars as well.
Well, I think you get to live out every single aspect of your daydreams through writing if you do it properly and like you actually do it rather than just messing around, pretending.
Which is why to get deep, which is why you made the joke earlier about the rom-com thing.
Yes.
Because fundamentally, I was just...
You just wanted to fall in love.
I did. Yeah, yeah. And that's why
all of Chris's plays and scripts are always about love. And beautifully done.
That's why I'm not writing
anymore.
And they
always get together. Do you think that's what it is? You're happy.
I think
happiness has ruined you.
I think that plays a part in it to some degree. Yeah. And I'm not at all blaming for
settling
making me
down.
Happy. Yeah. Or anything like that. Because actually she would do nothing but encourage me to write more.
Yeah.
I think there is an element of... you know, feeling so lucky to have, feeling so lucky to have one dream and aspiration filled that you kind of go, oh, what if I never become a writer? That's, you know.
Oh, that's so sweet.
But I think, you know, I've got to pay the bills somehow.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I think.
I think that's part of getting older as well, because I know now I'm always checking people's ages and I'm always looking at what they've achieved compared to what I've achieved. And then I feel really bad because I feel like I could have, my mum thinks I could have achieved a lot more.
Yeah. And I feel that I absolutely, and that is a huge motivator now. Like, yeah. I don't know. It coincides with turning 30. I don't know if it's specifically turning 30, but there's definitely a sense of, I need to get on and actually do this. And I still have that bug there. I still have that. I want to write. I want to do something bug. I've never, despite being happy, I've not lost that. I just perhaps have dwelled in the happiness. And now I need to.
You get caught up in it. You've got a lot of things to do and things to sort out. Yeah, and things like, fall by the wayside. It's like having kids. You haven't got a lot of time unless you make it.
Last year was the first year that I hadn't actually, every other year I'd done a play or done a short film or done something. And actually for 2 years in a row, we'd entered specific film festivals and had kind of, I don't know if anyone's ever gone to local short film festivals, but they can be very, there's some dark shit made by people.
I want to go now. Oh, man, actually, I want to write one.
And we, or write something lighthearted because it stands out because it's not, you know, about death. We kind of had it almost felt like we were beginning to the second year we went there was almost a sense of, oh, you're the guys that do the lighthearted stuff, oh, I enjoyed it. And it felt like you know, not that it would go anywhere, but that it was being remembered and consistent. Yeah. And last year was the first year that we didn't film anything to make that, and I didn't do anything with the theatre at all, but it was the year that we got engaged, started planning the wedding and bought a house.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It absolutely, life gets in the way. But we probably use life gets in the way as more of an excuse than the people around, than life would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tricky one.
Nick said you could go to a writer's retreat.
I know,
that's...
But he just bought a motorbike, so he's just trying to
counterbalance
his guilt there. But I think because when you're writing as a hobby, the people around you that love you expect to have an outcome at the end.
Mm.
Whereas if you were, you know, playing guitar for a hobby or fixing bikes or running, you're not people aren't necessarily saying, so you're going to do a marathon. They're not really interested in what's coming out.
Yeah,
so it's that kind of pressure as well.
Yeah, they want to see the tangible outcome.
Yeah, so you're writing. What are you writing?
Yeah.
People ask what I'm writing. I don't always want to tell them.
I get it. Like, we went to a friend from the theatre's 60th. We went and the whole night was full of people asking Jess what I was writing.
Ooh.
And she was like, that's ridiculous. Like, do they not know how lazy you are? And then she said it made her laugh because I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm working on a few things. Jess would be sounding like, I'm not aware of you working on anything.
It's kind of worse when you're working on a slightly dirty major tragedy because this is really filthy. And I sent chapters to people and they come back going, it's a bit...
Would love to read some of it.
Have you not read it? I will send you the first chapter.
No.
It's a bit racy.
I sent you my last thing. You criticised.
Rightly.
Rightly, yeah. It was an awful description of a character.
No, I sent it to Mandy. She went, ooh, hello.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. It's racy.
Yeah.
I like the racy bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do I, like, especially with the plays. Like, in the last play, I had a scene where you stripped down to your underwear. And that
yes,
was
again racy.
And every play has had two characters kiss and actually kiss, because I hate going to Amdram and they do that thing where clearly in the script they're meant to kiss and they just like
their faces touch, yeah,
and then they fall and I hate it, and I worry that I seem pervy, but it's like no, I'm deliberately trying to. I don't remember ever doing that in kiss. But even writing, do you know what I mean? Especially when you're writing and you kind of have an idea of who's going to play the parts, you know.
Yeah.
I was thinking of something else the other day, and I was like, and in it there was also a character that stripped. I was like, God, I've got to stop making my friend strip. That's weird.
No, mate, it's lovely though, because it's nice to have that kind of challenge. Because especially in like Amdram stuff, it tends to be quite safe because of who's doing it and the audience. Yes. So it's nice to have something that you can really get into, and also to have a proper kiss. I've come from a previous previous theatre company Amdram thing, and we never really did a proper kiss because that would be weird.
But it's so much, it takes the audience out so much more if they don't kiss, because you go, no, they're not kissing. And yeah, I loved that, like when you, the noise that was always associated when you took off your dress of just like, oh, like this is a surprise. Like, I love that noise.
I'm glad I did it, but I don't know why I did it. In a way. I'm glad it's done. I don't have to do it again.
Yeah.
So weird. The weirdest thing is walking around Summer's looking for underwear.
Yeah.
Should I text you a picture? Would that be weird?
And like, when I said something to Jess about tonight and recording this, and she was like, "Do you ever kind of pause and think, I've split the cost of some of Jenny's underwear with her husband?" I was like, "Good, no, but that is a bit weird when you think of it like that."
I don't think you ever pay me back.
I will. I'm happy to, but. But yeah,
it's long gone now. It's fine. I've never worn it since. If that makes you feel better, it's
too weird to feel.
It would be too weird to wear it again, and you can't give it away to someone.
I wore this on stage. Doesn't sound great, does it?
I wore knickers underneath. Does that make it better? I don't know.
But I did. It was. It's not genuinely. It was kind of a thinking of the context that was being written for, and going, well, what would I want to see in a play? I'd like to see some actual kissing in a love story, and I'd like to see something that shocks.
Find all our show notes and links on our website, powerpodcastuk.blogspot.co.uk, or you can email us at powerpodcastuk@gmail.com.
Find us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram at PowPodcastUK. Please give us a like and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast.